Reverend Robert Banker from the Open Door Church of Oceano. Please stand.
Shall we pray? Our Father, we give thanks unto you again for the one. We realize that in spite of the fact that we live in such a wonderful area, still there are needs and there are problems, and the council will be facing some of them tonight. We pray that you would give them wisdom. This I ask in my Savior's name. Amen.
Amen. And let us not forget our soldiers overseas and here at home. Okay, the flag salute. I will introduce now Chuck Howell, Senior Vice Commander, Five Cities Post 2829, and Amy Clayton, President of the VFW Auxiliary, Five City Post Auxiliary 2829.
Thank you very much. We'd like to thank you for inviting us. 52 years ago, I took my oath to this nation. The major in the Marine Corps that swore me in said that we gave up any question of where we went and any views we had on active duty to go where we were told. I still feel bound to that oath, and I will serve it faithfully for as long as I live. Would you join me now in a salute to the colors that represent our nation by placing your right hand over your heart and repeating with me the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chuck and Amy. Litigation pursuant to Subdivision B of Section 54956.9. The council reconvened in public session. No reportable action was taken in closed session, and the city council was adjourned. Ceremonial calendar. Tonight we're going to have presentations of the 2004 Spring Garden Tour recipients. Kathy Pector, our Park and Rec Director, please come forward.
Thank you. Getting better, see that?
Yeah.
I would just like to personally thank all the participants. Having the plant exchange at my home doesn't give me a chance to see all your gardens, but I understand they were very nice when people came. They talked a lot about all the gardens and things that they've seen and all the good ideas that they had. So thank you again for opening your homes to us. Okay, moving on. Now, public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within this jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on.
Let's have a little decorum and no chewing in the microphone on the munchies. Would appreciate that very much. But please, let's do have a nice agenda and get through it quickly if we can. Thanks.
That's what I told John, Helen.
And I told her we would.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak?
Mayor and City Council members, my name is Jessie Lemus. I reside at 1384 Mentone Avenue. I'm here to comment on the code enforcement presentation of June 7th. Code enforcement is long overdue, and it's good to see the city moving forward in this area. Whether it be reactive or proactive reporting of code enforcement violations, the name of the individual reporting the violations needs to remain confidential. For most people, it's difficult enough approaching a family member, friend, or coworker regarding issues, let alone a neighbor with code enforcement violations. Those that have tried to find resolution with their neighbors without success must be protected. Speaking from personal experience, the potential for harassment and intimidation is real. Recently, I had a male come to my door late at night and accuse my household of calling law enforcement. The threat of vandalism is a possibility, and who pays for that? We all do. I pay with property damage, time, expense, my safety, and well-being. We all pay with higher insurance rates, lower property values, and a lower quality of life. Chief Bradbury and Councilman Lieberman stated it best, that yes, you've tried communicating your concerns or that the people are dysfunctional that will be affected when you make your decision regarding the confidentiality of the reporting party. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak tonight?
Could we just ask on that issue, is that a problem? Keeping the names of complainants confidential? Is that a legal problem?
No, it's not a problem. It's a policy decision that can be dictated by the council.
Mayor, City Council members, and members of the audience, the Parks and Recreation Department is updating the recreation element of the general plan, and we would like to invite the public to come to two workshops that we have planned. The first workshop is this Thursday evening, June 24th, 6:30 p.m. here in the council chambers. And the next workshop will be July 1st, 1 p.m. here in the council chambers. We would like to encourage the public to come out, participate, and share your ideas for the future planning of parks and recreation. Thank you.
Did you say that was 1?
1 p.m., Thursday, July 1st. It was an opportunity for people who can't make the night meetings to come to a day meeting.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Okay, I think there's a young lady in the front row that would like to speak.
My name is Tiesin Smitty, and I live at 1955 La Jolla Court. Dear Grover Beach Mayor and City Council members, I'm here tonight to say thank you for all the generosity from the council and community and donating the rest of the money needed for my trip to go to Washington, D.C. Because of the support of my community, thanks.
I hope someday maybe we'll see you sitting up here. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't give those to Kathy Petker whenever you do.
Yes.
That.
Well, somebody should enjoy them since we can't eat them up here.
Yeah. Yes. Helen, can I have a cookie?
You can lick right there. Should we? Or you can take your basket
back. Okay, I'll tell you what we'll
just
do.
Leave them. We'll get it back to you.
So, T. Essence, when do you leave for Washington, D.C.? July 1st. As we said earlier, we're very proud of you. Okay? Yeah, I see that. Do well, and maybe when you get back, your mom and you guys can come back and kind of share, you know, some of the things that you've learned and keep up the good work. Okay?
Take lots of pictures, okay? Bye-bye. Don't tell them how nice it is out here in California either. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak? Okay, moving on to the consent agenda. Is there anything that... Okay, then can I have a second for Dave's motion, please?
Second.
Items 2 and 3.
Okay. Items 2 and 3, voice vote. All those in favor of items 2 and 3, all those in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, Steve, item 4.
Thank you. I just wanted to discuss what's before us this evening and to once again share where I'm at on the budget document. It's a tough year for California. It's a tough year for Grover Beach. It always seems to be a challenge for us. I don't want to be seen as a person that didn't vote for a budget. The majority of the budget I support. I appreciate all the work that went into the budget document, with the exception of a couple of things. The project manager position that's proposed, I'm still in strict opposition to that. I don't think it's a position that can be justified. And I'm really concerned about our decision to make community development a enterprise fund. And I'm very concerned that we're going to, about the 100% cost recovery challenge. And I just wanted to, again, state that before the vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Schultz?
Yes. I also wanted to state my reasons for not voting for the budget in concept. I do believe that a majority of it is a good budget, as I had said at the last meeting. I have a few reservations, I think maybe five, and I'll just quickly go over them because we're trying to move this meeting along this evening. The first one is we've talked about establishing planning and building as an enterprise maximus study. My concern, and I think several of us stated at the last meeting, is that we would rather be conservative in the fees, and if we have to lower the fees, then I would feel comfortable doing that. I certainly have a lot of misgivings that if we are undershooting the mark, reconvening a Blue Ribbon Committee, again, coming back to this council asking us to raise the fees twice in 1 year. I've got a real issue with that. The second issue that I had was, and I know that Councilmember Eckbaum had in his motion, there was the establishment of a state budget crisis reserve of about $58,000. I was hoping that we could increase that because there certainly are some issues still out there. The governor's alternate initiative to what the local cities, counties, and special districts got on the ballot has not passed the legislature. And fundraisings thus far is going less than splendid. So there are certainly concerns there. The third issue that I had was and I have to be careful how I broach this subject. It's something that was brought to our attention regarding one of the sources of revenues for this community. And so I don't know where that's going to come out, but I think there is a potential impact there. And I don't really believe the budget addressed that fully, so I still have concerns on that. And then I had talked about the senior sergeant position, and I agree that that should move forward. And I still believe that the new chief, since Chief Bradbury has resigned, should have an opportunity to participate in filling that vacant position. So those are pretty much the issues.
The project manager position, I still feel pretty much as most of the other council does. I have reservations over that, and I don't think I'll support it unless I supported it in the budget, but I wouldn't support it unless when that position comes forward, unless we can really unless I can get some of the substantiation documentation that I talked about. As far as the sergeant position, I think that we've had John Bradbury as a chief of police for several years, and we've had given him the opportunity to run the city as he, or the police department as he feels, and I think it's still on our nexus to support him, even though he's leaving in a short amount of time. I think it's our nexus to support him in whatever he feels will move that department forward, especially since we're going into a transition by losing a police chief and trying to gain another one. That's a tough transition for a department to make. We've been through it before, and I do support that sergeant position. And whenever the department feels like filling that, I would be in support of that. And I think those were some of the sticking points, and that's why I voted for the budget. And I've been on record for several years of not voting for a budget, so this is kind of a turnaround for me. Steve and I have kind of flip-flopped, but...
Several? Did he say several?
Yeah, several. Okay. Councilmember
I could just add on that senior sergeant position for the police department. I understand that the timing of it will certainly be well after the new lieutenant is here, and sometime after Mr. Bradbury is gone because of the time delays in advertising and interviewing and background checks and everything. And so it's up to the incoming people to appoint the sergeant. But I think it's I'm taking the advice of Mr. Bradbury that's a job that's necessary to fill as soon as we can. But I think the rest of it reminds me of last year when Dee and I voted again at a pretty solid budget that has been listening to the wishes that we have expressed over the years. It's not that they just present something and we rubber stamp it after we keep telling them to do this and do this and do this and they do it. It shouldn't be suggested that it comes from them. It comes from the direction that we gave them, and they are responding by giving us the budget that we requested for. So with that, I'm here.
Okay. So can I have a motion for item 4, please?
I move adoption of the fiscal year 05 budget, item number 4.
I'll second that.
May we have roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
No.
Yes.
No.
Okay, item 5.
Boy,
John.
You're picking on me tonight, aren't you? This for me? Yes, I asked to have this item pulled. I agree with a majority of the traffic committee recommendations. I support the four-way stop on South 12th Street and Seabright. Also, I was looking at the red curve that was requested by the principal, in which the patrol was recommending 30 feet red zone south of the exit driveway on the east side of the street, and the traffic committee recommended 15 feet. I would like to see that go back to 30 feet. I think that would enhance visibility. So I'd like to maybe see if I couldn't convince the council to modify that finding. And then the one thing that the committee was recommending denial, and they also had suggested that the school obtain a comprehensive parking facilities plan. I'm not quite sure what the basis of that decision was. It is a city. It is a public street that has been accepted and is maintained by the city. So I do believe the city has some responsibility in this, and I think it's a good idea to consider.
Chief John Bradbury, member of the Traffic Committee. Last year, we repainted a lot of the red zone on Long Branch. Signs were posted for the buses, and now the school is looking at it that the signs should come down and say only enforce the red zone in the morning when the buses are there and in the afternoon. Otherwise, folks can park there. Well, buses are in and out of there all day. This is a nightmare. We've already marked it we made it so that it was visible and it was enforceable, and now the school wants to change the parameters, and we thought that in that case the school ought to repost it. If that's what they want to do, they should pay for it. And that's why the recommendation was made that we not change the signs at this time.
Okay, Mayor.
So is that punitive? Is that what you're...
No, the feeling of the traffic committee was that over the last year, we've put up new signs. We painted it. They'd like to change it. They can go ahead and revise it. We
warned repeatedly by officers, and several citations have been issued. So are you saying that the parents who've gotten the tickets are the ones making this complaint? It's not the parents of children at the school who are expressing concerns? Because I've heard not just parents, but some of the administrators at the school expressing that it could work a little better along the section of Long Branch.
I have an officer that's assigned to each school, and that officer talks with the teachers and the principals, has lunch, plays with the kids. It's part of our outreach program. And the principal of that school was discussing this issue with the officer, so the officer passed it on. When we have the major problem is when school is starting or ending, and that's when the buses are there. And some parents would just like to be able to park wherever they'd like to, disregarding the red zone. And that's what it comes down to.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like it's obviously a bigger issue. And I think one of the things when the circulation element comes forward, or if there's a way that we can maybe talk about having a demonstration project on two streets, I think Long Branch is probably one of those streets in which the right-of-way is 120 feet wide, which is as wide as Broadway and the city of Santa Maria. And I think there may be an opportunity to resolve maybe the issue of bus loading and unloading and creating additional parking. So if this council doesn't want to go down this road tonight, I think we have some other options.
And the school has talked about that, having the kids that are riding buses walk across the yard and load up on South 12th. But that hasn't gone into effect yet. If you remember now, that whole school, the streets have been reached.
So maybe after she gets a better handle on it, things will be discussed more. And, sir, what about John's mention of the 30 feet instead of 15?
The committee made the recommendation for the shorter distance in order to try to keep parking spaces available. If the council would like to make 30 feet, feel free.
Okay. Is there any other questions of this item?
I just want to jump in. Chief, I understand exactly the frustration that your offices are having over on Long Branch. My oldest one goes to Grover Heights, and it's a choreographed movement with parents dropping off kids in the morning and buses trying to get in and out. And I just think right now the school should deal with the way it is. I mean, to have a bus pulling in and having parents chasing a kid who forgot a lunch and leaving the car running there, I just don't think it's something we should get involved with at this point. But I do like your idea, John, of possibly looking at making a bus drop-off zone or designated parking for the buses in the long run.
I agree with you, Steve. And I think that the other part of that is, for enforcement purposes, it makes it kind of tough if the bus zones are red part of the day and not other parts of the day. And you know, what happens if a bus comes 10 minutes early and someone's parked there, and it becomes a real... becomes a hassle, and I think it's either a red zone or it's not a red zone. Mm-hmm. It's kind of black and red, or red and white, or something.
There's also field trips and everything that you have to.
Someone's illegally parking in
a lot
zone.
Of the bus zones for SCAT, they're not painted at all, and then we run into the problem when cars are parked there.
Another thing to fix, huh? Thank you, Chief.
But with students, you also have the issue that if they're parked and they're they're away from the curb and unloading. If the bus turns on the flashing reds, then no one can move. Mm. So there are a number of issues that are involved here, and that's why we were hoping with a revisited their plan for parking at the school, they'd come up with some suggestions, just like Grover Heights did several years ago. That was quite troublesome up there, and they came up with some ideas that helped improve the situation.
They could rip out some of those sidewalks and put the parking in there.
Okay. Stay tuned.
Diagonal parking.
That may be part of the demonstration project, and I think there are potential sources out there to do that, so stay tuned. With that, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the Traffic Committee's recommendation, adopt the resolution to install a four-way stop sign and crosswalks at the intersection of South 12th Street and Seabright Avenue, and adopt the resolution to install a red zone of 30 feet, not 15, on the east side of the sidewalk just south of the northernmost exit off the main parking lot at Grover Beach Elementary School on South 10th Street.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
No.
Yes.
We're at home. On December 2003, the then fire chief, Jack Creswald, retired, and there was a vacancy for that permanent position. And an opportunity then existed to create arrangements for the oversight and management of the Grover Beach Firemen by alternative means. We looked into various options of providing services, and like Arroyo Grande and other agencies, we somewhat struggled with figuring out how to do this at a reasonable cost. At the May 3rd, 2004 City Council meeting, the current Fire and Life Safety Services program was evaluated and alternatives for enhancing services were indeed considered. As a result, the City Council responded by approving service enhancements that included the hiring of four fire captains and three fire engineers. The City also directed staff to implement a cost savings plan by negotiating a cooperative agreement to share fire chief services with neighboring agencies. So we went through that process, and everything has worked out very well to date. Tomorrow night, the City of Arroyo Grande City Council will be reviewing the same contract agreement you'll be looking at this evening. With the approval of the minimum daily staffing having been made, the remaining challenge now is for us to look at an oversight and management of the fire department operations. In order to enter into a cooperative agreement, specific services must be provided and identified. The following details, key elements of the services to be provided, such as operational oversight of shift personnel, representation of regional meetings, and after-hour response to large-scale incidents and other services as summarized. Those would include supervise and provide direction as needed to fire prevention and fire suppression activities, coordinate with Grover Beach personnel when and to ascertain needs to evaluate the efficiencies of and businesses and visitors will be well served through this cooperative agreement. I'd be more than happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Is there any questions of staff?
I have a couple. The first question I have is I don't see any anything in here concerning oversight committee, and I thought that was going to be part of this agreement that we'd have some type of an oversight committee such as we do have had with Oceano.
Yes, there is, and I believe if item 7, benefit expectations and performance-based measurements. The benefits of this agreement for the management and administration of services are outlined work outputs. Outputs, cost avoidance issues, and related service enhancements shall be monitored bimonthly by an oversight committee. The committee will consist of agreed-upon representatives from each party and may utilize performance-based rating sheet, and that should be attached. If not, okay, I can project. Yeah,
okay, yeah. I glanced over that. I guess I didn't read the fine print. Interested. Okay. The other thing I was going to ask, I know that we've, on an ongoing basis, have been real vocal about inviting Oceano into this. If they were to come in at this point or at other points, is there some what would they benefit and what would they have to like put up as as part of this to be beneficial to everyone? Now I know that Arroyo Grande has got the fire, they supply a fire chief, we're supplying a training officer. Is there a part of that that Oceano would have to supply, and what? How do you think that would work? Has there been any discussions between you and Chief Fiebig concerning that?
Yes, sir, it has. And with concerned residents, from Oceana because of the challenge that they have is somewhat like we had, is how are we going to make this happen for us financially? And one of the benefits I think that actually plays out here is that if they continue to do that type of research and look at alternatives for joining in and participating in this, they're going to have a chance to look at this agreement between Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach to make sure it's something they really do want to get involved in. And the door is always open, I'm sure. I'm sure the council here is concerned, as the Arroyo Grande City Council is, as we all are, about making sure that no one's left out. I think the appropriate time is for them to continue to look at some alternatives and things they may be able to develop to offer to this proposal, and then come back when they have something, and that would certainly be considered by all the parties involved in this agreement. So the door is open. It's a matter of them developing what they want it to look like, because we really can't do it for them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Does anyone have questions of staff?
We brought you on to revamp our fire department, and you have some huge fingerprints all over this one. So you're going to have to take the bragging rights along with the blame, if there is some there.
There you go.
I'm really sorry that the way we treated Oceano. I wouldn't have been a support of doing it this fast, but I appreciate your input on how to do it. I think I'm going to bow to your expertise, and this is the best way for us to go, and I'm hoping that somehow Oceano can come on board with us.
Well, I think we all are, but if you really do look at it, I think there may be a benefit of them being able to take a look at this and see where they would fit, and I think we can make it work.
Good. Ron, I didn't see that number 7 about the oversight committee, but who's going to be on that committee and when they will start meeting to look at this transition period, because certainly there will be some problems, I would think, starting up.
Mayor, can I jump in there? I think we already have an oversight committee that's been in charge of fire at this point. I don't know why we'd want to change. I feel that would work just as well with Oceano as, I mean, Arroyo Grande as it has with Oceano. So I don't know if
I agree with that. Arroyo Grande does not have one.
Right. Okay.
And so we need to just coordinate with them move our people all together, I would think.
Mr. Anderson.
Mayor, if I could, the agreement is structured in such a way that the two communities can get together on a common basis for such an oversight committee. And we really can't move forward until both communities have approved of the agreement. And certainly at that time we can sit down with each one of the councils and city manager and the fire chief at that point and figure out what's the most appropriate way to staff such a committee, whether it would be two council members and city manager from each city along with the chief or just what that would look like. We haven't discussed with them, but I think we obviously have had a history that has worked out very well with regard to our relationship with Oceano, where we had two council members, the city manager and the general manager, as well as the two.
Councilmember Lieberman, do you have any?
Yeah, thank you. Chief, I'm sorry, we didn't receive attachment A in the packet, so that might be some of the reasons for this. So I don't think we got attachment A. I agree with what the two of you have brought up. It would be nice to define what that is, but I guess as long as we know there's at least one elected official in the oversight committee, which by definition means there should be at least one official in the oversight committee, I'm okay with this. And I did want to address the Oceano issue. I think from the position of chief officers in the fire service to elected officials to the people that are on the floor providing the service, I think we're all sensitive to the Oceano issue. The bottom line is we asked Doug Hamp to come as our interim fire chief to help Grover Beach develop a plan, which he's done. And I'm thrilled to say that we're here and the budget's been approved and we're ready to move forward and he's in hiring. And the bottom line is we asked Chief Hamp to come here to help the citizens of Grover Beach. And while we'll remain sensitive to our neighbors, we always have, he's accomplished the job we brought him in to do. And I thank you for that.
just for your information, the document up here is a performance-based report card, if you will. And these are the things that we said could be recognized or would be benefits to entering into such an agreement. And they talked about general dimensions of the issues, better services, immediate resources, and so on, the harvesting of our neighbors' resources, service enhancements and cost avoidance programs, reduced response times and such, opportunities and other potentials, the elimination of duplicate services, see how we're doing. And in the end result, council can make a decision if they like to continue on with such an agreement in the future.
I don't think any of the council received that particular piece
no,
of information.
No, apparently it wasn't in here.
Anyway, my concern, I have to agree with Ron and Dave, that I was very concerned that Oceana wasn't brought in, whatever the circumstances were. And I'd like to see some kind of, some way that Oceana be brought into this at some point. You know, that'll be up to them, but I'd like to leave that.
I can assure you the door is open.
The door is open.
That's correct.
Okay. You heard it on record. The door is open. Because they have been very good to us, and like I said, come mutual aid, we're all there together. We're one at that point. I did have a question about who pays for out-of-town training, like when we go to the league or anything like that. Is that in here, or does Red Grandy pay for that?
That's why we're on at Oceano. We want them to. No, just kidding.
if the question is with regard to the fire chief would be an employee of the city of Arroyo Grande, and his expenses would be covered by Arroyo Grande. The training officer, captain in Grover Beach, which would be providing services to Arroyo Grande and Oceano, as far as that goes, would be a Grover Beach employee, and so all training and travel and so on would be covered by Grover Beach.
Now, at some point, say if Oceano wanted to use our training officer or whatever because of the mutual aid thing, is this handled in this particular thing or is it not?
I think this is the type of thing that would have to be developed, and that same program would be shared with Oceano, certainly. So it's a matter of they're welcome to have those things anytime. It's just a matter of getting them on board.
I guess my reason for that question is that, heaven forbid, some kind of disaster happens and that everyone is trained in the same fashion.
That's the intention of this whole program.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Scholes, do you have another question?
I don't have any questions. I have some comments when this comes back to this council.
Okay. I'm going to open this up to the public. Is there anyone in the audience that has any questions of this staff report?
Good evening, Vern Dahl, President of Oceano Community Services District. I would like to thank each and every one of you for making it clear and for your support that the door is open to us. We're right now in the process of identifying all our possibilities and, you know, what we can do and what's available to us. And I appreciate the statements, and hopefully we'll have quite a bit of communication between our staff and your staff in the future to see what those possibilities are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to speak on this item?
Jim Hill. I'm a resident of Oceano. I'd just like to thank Chief Hamp for his interim Chief Hamp for his dedication to this issue. He did approach Oceano early on. As the proposal was being designed to work together in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Mayor Pro Tem Scholes?
Yes. I want to say something. I don't know if it's going to be politically correct or not, but I am not about to sit up here and apologize for enhancing fire life safeties for the residents of the city of Grover Beach. Chief Hemp did make the offer to Oceano, and for whatever reason, they didn't get on board. And I think we've all up here said that the door is open, and I think that's something for them to work out. But I just wanted to commend the chief for coming in and doing a fabulous job in such a short time. And I've been on record, and I will remain on record, and that my main goal is to do what is in the best interest of the residents of this community. There is mutual aid agreement, and we will certainly help Oceano out in any disaster. I think that was pretty self-evident when the San Simeon quake hit, and there were trunk lines that were broken, and our Public Works Department went over there and went above and beyond the call of duty. So for anyone out there thinking that we have left Oceano high and dry, I certainly hope you will realize what you're saying and understand that from where I sit, we're doing the best that we can for our community, and that's Grover Beach, and we will certainly be there for our neighbors in time of need.
Thank you. Is there any other comments on the council?
I would like to just kind of fortify what John said. I hearty thank you to the chief, and we're certified fire agreement or fire department. And with that, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the plan that's before us and authorize the mayor to execute the agreement.
Second.
Okay, and a motion by Councilmember Arnoldson, second by Councilmember Lieberman. This is a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Chief Hamp. Before we move on, I'd like to introduce our supervisor, Ms. Peg Pinard. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 7, Local Street Improvement Program, Phase 3, authorization to initiate bid process.
Mayor, members of the council, as promised to the City Council, we're presenting to you tonight the request for authorization to go out to bid process for Phase 3 of our street improvement program. The anticipated cost is approximately $154,000 associated with street. Then there's some additional costs that would be associated with water as well. So what we have before you is the map reflecting Attachment A, the Phase 3 of our program. It's also reflected in Attachment 2 of the staff report under the Capital Improvement Plan for the fiscal year 05 budget. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to respond.
Is there any questions of staff?
No questions.
No.
What I'm talking about is the area south of Ron's Arner Nursery, where we have curb gutter and sidewalk, but we have a little island of dirt there that is being held up, I guess, by a utility pole. Mm. And it'd be really nice to have that little piece of asphalt put in there. And I just wonder if that would be maybe something we could tag on to one of these budget items.
That since you brought it up, I did discuss it with Mr. Ford. And he advised me that we're waiting upon the utility company to relocate that. Mm-hmm. Once that is done, that portion of the project will be completed.
Mm, good.
Okay. So any other questions of staff? Is anyone in the audience that has any questions of this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back.
I move that we authorize Community Development Director to cause the preparation of bid documents and seek bids for construction of Phase 3 Local Street Improvement Program.
Second.
Can a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholl, second by Councilmember Arnoldson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item 8.
Go ahead, sir. Mayor, members of the council, at the last city council meeting, the June 7th, the city council requested staff to, after some dialogue, to bring back a resolution of intent to initiate a zoning ordinance text amendment relating to C-train cargo containers, which would permit the placement of the same within all zone districts. The pair of the appropriate public notices. Present a report to Planning Commission. Planning Commission will conduct a public hearing, and they will forward a recommendation to the City Council should you adopt this resolution of intention. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
there's any questions to staff? Councilmember Eckbaum?
I was really a surprise when this came forward. I think this is a terrible thing. But where are you going to allow this use? Is this going to be considered a storage building, or are they going to have to go through and show a full building pad? Is this in replace of a garage or a storage shed? A storage shed now you can have a 10 by 10 or something. These are much larger than that.
Dave, can I answer that? I brought this forward. Would that help?
Well,
would that get,
well. Go ahead.
Either would way. That,
okay.
I don't care.
Who do you want to? Who do you want to?
Mr. Raper first.
Basically, what we would do is do an analysis and a recommendation to the Planning Commission. They would review that information, and after conducting their public hearing, doing their deliberation, would make a recommendation to you. It could go from one extreme to saying, no, we do not want to permit them, and keep the ordinance as is and make that recommendation to City Council. It may go to the other extreme, which requires that, as it was suggested, the City Council is that they put a facade on the cargo container that blends it into the architectural features of the residential unit. There may be a number of issues that would be raised associated with that. Initiating the ordinance amendment does not necessarily ensure that the Planning Commission will make a positive.
You expect it to be allowed, and they build a facade on the outside of it so it looks like the house and it's a permanent structure?
It could go in that direction, most likely because of the size and weight and cost of moving once it's placed and secured, especially I would think in a residential lot that would be more of a permanent fixture.
But that's my point. You're not allowed to build that size of a storage shed on your property.
They would be required to get the appropriate zoning clearances. If they attached, if they installed electrical, they would be required to get the appropriate building permit for that. So there's... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Why wouldn't they just come forward with a building permit application to build a permanent stick-built structure on there rather than haul in a metal container? I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that.
Can I jump in?
What happens when these things start rotting out and, you know, they could be in your next-door neighbors or whatever?
It's the same thing with any kind of structure, property maintenance issue. If it becomes a nuisance and a potential hazard, then it becomes an issue for code enforcement and property maintenance issues. There are many questions that that can be related to any type of typical conventional built structures. If they let it go into disrepair, then it's had the same type of issues.
Councilmember Arnelson, I know you're...
Yeah, I'm kind of chomping at the bit here because I brought this forward. I know at least four places in this community that have these placed already. Very cheap method of construction, and you can get a 10 by 10. That's what our ordinance states, that you can build a 10 by 10 structure at this point without a building permit, 100 square feet in your backyard if you have all the setbacks and all those requirements taken care of. And I don't know why we wouldn't allow this, as long as it was something that wasn't a real eyesore. I mean, if it bothers you that it's brown and it says, West Coast Sea Strand on it or something like that, then maybe we would require people to paint it or make it look like a structure by putting a siding facade on the side that shows towards the street, or put a roof on it such that it looks like a little building. But for $1,500, you can buy these things, and you can get up to 40 feet for about 1,500 feet, and try and build a stick building for that much. It's impossible. They're secure. They're virtually very watertight. They're great structures. As a matter of fact, I'd like to put one on my property, but the ordinance prohibits it, and so I guess I won't. But I could name a couple of people, like I said, that are prominent people in the community that have them, and you'd know who they are if I talked about them. And I don't see a problem with them. If the architectural is the problem, let's deal with the architectural part of it and not the structure part, because they're a better structure than you can build by stick. stick construction probably isn't as strong and as good as what these containers are. So that's why I brought it forward.
Councilmember Lieberman.
Thank you. It raises many questions. I drove town quite a bit in search of some of these structures, and I indeed found some. And some are behind fences that stick over the fence line. Some are in yards without any camouflage at all, and I personally don't see how they fit into a residential neighborhood. I like Ron's idea that they have to be dressed to resemble a storage shed or look like an extension of a home, but I don't see how we could ever entertain a 40-foot container. I know they come in smaller. Do you know what other configurations?
10, 20, and 40, I think, or maybe even 30. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So those are my concerns with moving forward.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Schultz?
Yeah. Current code doesn't allow these anywhere in the city.
It permits them by a conditional use permit in the industrial zone, and a temporary use permit for construction storage units under a temporary use permit, but not as a permanent place.
So if someone had a deep lot and they were able to put these in the yard where they are not visible from any public way, are we dictating how they can use their property?
Well, right now it's prohibited by your current code.
Because I guess the reason I asked that is I'm not convinced that, yeah, I guess there would be treatments. I don't know how extensive that would get. Mm-hmm. My first reaction is, if you could put them on your yard and you comply with all the standards and it is not visible from any public way, then I could see discussing it. I don't know if there's a way to really dress these up and outside of building construction, additional construction to conceal them. But certainly I think, you know me, I'm the type that's always looking where I am right now.
Is there any other questions of staff? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience that has any questions of this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to council. May I have a motion? There's no more discussion.
I would like to see us receive and file this issue and not send it forward for any further staff time efforts. I think that it's inappropriate for a residential area to have C-trains in them. If you're on a ranch or an industrial area with a use permit, fine.
So does that mean at the same time that those ones that are in a community, you're going to move forward on active code enforcement on them?
When we have code enforcement, absolutely. I don't think they belong there. They came in here illegally somehow or before the ordinance. I don't know. Mm. But I don't think that they belong here at all.
Mm-hmm.
If they, especially if they haven't gone through some kind of planning commission, a lot coverage besides the setbacks or anything else, I don't see it. These are temporary storage buildings, and that's what they should be, temporary. So I'd like to see us just not move forward with this. And I'd make that a motion.
Okay. Is there a second on this motion? I'll second it. Before we follow through, Ms. MacGyver, did you have a statement?
I have one in my neighborhood. The man has brought it in because he's moving to Arizona. And it's there strictly to load all of his workshop into for transport over there. And there is one other that I know of that was in and is grandfathered in, and that's been determined after many code enforcement officers have tried to enforce it, that was put in there before you ever had the law. And those are the three that I personally know of. But when Ron says about a C-train, they're made to put on ocean vessels and transport. The Navy uses them, everyone uses them, and yes, they are sturdy. Not only that, but they can break concrete if you put it on them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. MacGyver. Okay, we'll call.
I have a question of the city attorney. If someone owns a lot in this city and it's large enough to put one of these
these items on it, and it is not visible from any public way, do we have the legal authority to say they are not allowed anywhere in this city?
You have the authority to dictate whether you will permit these types of structures within the city limits. You do.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, may we have roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Come back to me.
Mayor, members of the council, this is an additional resolution of intention to initiate a zoning ordinance text amendments, which would modify front, side, and rear yard setbacks in all residential zone districts and mobile home districts and mixed-use districts relating to the setbacks. The concept that the City Council discussed at their June 7, 2004 referred to the neo-traditional planning criteria that reduces the yard setbacks. Many communities have varying yard setbacks, and what this would do is initiate an ordinance amendment that would direct staff to prepare a study, cause the public hearing notices to be prepared and issued, and present a report to Planning Commission with various alternatives relating to yard setbacks. The Planning Commission, again, then would make their recommendation to City Council. Then you would conduct your public hearing considering the report of the Planning Commission. Attached is a resolution that would initiate that process as requested by City Council at your last meeting.
Is there any questions of staff? Councilmember Ekbom? No?
I'm absolutely in favor of increasing our lot coverage for structures.
Yes.
Is this somehow related to that? This really bothers me. A five-yard setback, I can't imagine us reducing a side yard setback from 5 feet. But, I mean, and a front yard is 20 feet, a backyard.
Lots. Now, there are many communities that have a variety of yard setbacks associated with development. My former community, we had the traditional 5-5 and 10-foot rear yard setback with a 20 front yard setback. We reduced that front yard to 10, the side yards to 10 for corner lots. And for interior lots, we reduced one side to 3 feet as long as it was clear and had a 5-foot side yard on the other side. And the concept associated with that was that they were going to smaller lots. The lots were getting narrower, and the homes were getting big. And they had architectural features such as entertainment center bump outs, fireplace bump outs, so on and so forth. Other communities with their separated accessory structures, such as their garages, sometimes they go back to zero rear yard setback and side yard setback, depending on the situations. So many communities have many different yard setbacks. It's based upon what they feel their community can support and the development scenario that is occurring. So what this text amendment would do is initiate that study. We could bring back a whole series of alternatives, show some sample site plans to demonstrate how the setbacks would work. If you look within the community, there are a variety of setbacks associated with existing residential developments. There are many that have front yards that go back to about 10 feet, going out and taking a look and see what setbacks exist out there, especially in the older neighborhoods, and then report back to the Planning Commission and forward that report to you as a City Council.
Can I jump in here? Thank you, Jake, for that long explanation. It was actually shorter than the PowerPoint you did.
Oh, we have one coming up.
I think the spirit of this amendment is trying to encourage, if some what you typically will see in suburbia is you have home designs in which the garage dominates the streetscape. Neo-traditional concepts tries to encourage detaching garages and putting those in the rear of the lot. And so if you take that garage, you put it in the rear of the lot, and you hold it to the 10-foot rear yard setback, you've in effect reduced the usable space, which now becomes between the garage and the main structure. So the idea is if you take that garage, you push it to 3 feet or 5 feet of the property line, then you've created additional usable space in between the detached garage and the primary structure. You've created defensible space, which is something that we're trying to get to. Corner lots, and this is dealing with just detached structures, not the primary structure. So detached garages where you have what they refer to as Hollywood driveways, which is the two ribbons of concrete and grass or whatnot in the center. So trying to encourage those sort of things to get the garages off of the front of the street and at the rear of the lot. So if someone's working on a car, it's not in the front of the house, it's toward the rear of the lot. And so that's the spirit and the idea that I brought this forward, is I think it will allow us to put some parameters that would allow people to be a little more creative in the way they design these homes, instead of putting that garage right on the front board, a community that at least I envision, and that's kind of was the intent, dealing with detached accessory structures such as parking, such as garages, and maybe even some storage areas as well.
So you can my question to you, John, is my garage sits out in front, but you drive around town, and I'd say 60% of people do not put their cars in the garage.
That's right.
They have them out in the streets or up on their lawns or whatever. So
wouldn't it be great if the garage, instead of being 20 feet where they park in the front, is back 100 feet so that at least the cars are sitting back toward the middle of the lot?
But to me, that's not going to make that much difference, because if they can't put them in the garage in front, they're sure as heck not going to put them in the back.
Well, I think if you go in a community and you look at those communities in which the home is on the street, there's a sidewalk, you have pedestrian-friendly neighborhoods, not garage-dominated neighborhoods in which people are having to walk around the garage to get to a front door. You know, La Serena, for all of the nice things that we say it has, there are units in there that have a garage, and that's the first thing you see when you walk in there, and you've got to walk around the garage through a little fence to get to the main entrance. And so how does that create a pedestrian-friendly atmosphere, getting back to a community that I know a lot of people long for, and that's why you see the emergence of neo-traditional concepts?
There is a big movement in the state of California to really encourage the flexible design, as Mayor Pro Tem Scholz has shared with the City Council. Communities do workshops. They look at planned communities that really support this type of development, with a lot of movement in California to encourage the neo-traditional planning back into the communities.
So if people nowadays convert their garages into another part of their house, so you're going to lose that much more control if the garages are in the back, by they can do it more so.
Well, anyone can do whatever they wish to do, as long as we don't catch them. Once we catch them, we require them to convert it back to the intended purpose of the structure. We have done some of that within the community just in recent weeks. Found one garage that was converted to a living unit. We required that to be converted back to the original intent. We had people living in a small shed. We required that to be vacated and converted back to the intent of the shed. So the building official and zoning staff are actually finding and causing corrections within the community.
Very good. Councilmember Arnelson.
Yeah, this goes back to my C-Strand deal. It's the reason most people are parking on the street isn't because they don't have a garage. It's because their garage is full of junk. They've got $500 worth of stuff in their junk in their garage that's so valuable they're going to save it for a garage sale someday, but they've got $60,000 worth of cars sitting on the street. It's beyond my comprehension. That's what I say. Let's give them a place to put some junk in the backyard and fix it up so it looks like a little cute little building or something like that. But nobody has any vision, you guys. I'm sorry. Just don't have the vision.
They can just pile more junk in those little trains.
Well, they probably might, but They might
we're driving by. It just reminds me of a friend that lives in Santa Maria, and their home is set up that way with a porch, a driveway up the side. It goes back to a garage with a breezeway that connects to the home. It's just such a nice layout. It's the homes that we used to know. And I think it's a great idea to be open-minded to that type of design. And then I look at, we're talking about mixed use. If we're talking about promoting more structures like the Beach Place, or bringing them out closer to the street because there's a retail component on the first floor and there's a residential upstairs, which makes sense to me that we should allow for parking behind that building.
And I'm all in agreement. I'm just saying that I like the Sea Strand out there too. I mean, I like John's concept. I do. It's a great concept.
Whoever's
concept.
I'm not picking on you. You're so sensitive.
But, no.
I think it's something.
No.
I think it's something we should pursue. Thank you.
Councilmember Ekbom.
I agree with you. I like the look of the garages behind there. When I'm looking at this, can you differentiate between the side and rear yard setbacks for a house rather than a garage? If you're going to have a zero lot line side yard setback, can it be just designed only for a garage or a 5-foot rear yard setback? You can separate.
Yes. We have developed such codes in my former community that would permit that.
Okay.
And
I thought a setback was a setback for any structure that you decide to put on there.
Yeah.
And the rest was going to be open space. But if you're going to have a 5-yard minimum rear yard setback and you're going to put your house back there, you're five yards from all your neighbors. I don't like that.
Yeah, no, if you put your house back there.
Yes, sir.
All about enhancing the community.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. Perhaps we should get clarity with regard to the direction, if direction is to be taken, whether this resolution only pertains to secondary structures and not actual residences, because at this point in time I'm not sure that that's clear.
Well, I would encourage the City Council to leave a flexibility where we can look at both. Quite honestly, what you can do is move the structures forward to 10-foot front yard setbacks and leave more private open space in the rear. You can also reduce your corner side yard setbacks to 10 feet. You can do many different things to, again, move the structures more closely to the public right-of-way to create the interaction and also create more private open space in the rear. So I would encourage the City Council to leave it flexible for staff to present the report to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission, after reviewing that information, can make a recommendation to you as a City Council. And once it gets to you, if you feel uncomfortable with the information or the recommendation of the Commission, you certainly have the ability to adopt whatever you feel is certainly appropriate for the community.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that has any questions of this item? Okay, bring it back to council.
I move that we adopt the resolution of intention to initiate the zoning ordinance amendment for
fraud. It'll be one of those nights.
Yeah.
I was just joking, by the way, when I said
right.
that. I want to vote after Ron. Yes.
I'm last.
Well, he voted.
Oh, he voted.
I said yes.
If he did, then I'll say yes. Okay, moving on. Anybody need a break yet? No? Moving on. Okay. Public hearings. Item 10, 2004 Weed Abatement Program Cost Protest Hearing.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, ladies and gentlemen, Doug Camp, your interim fire chief. Historically, the city of Grover Beach has supported a weed abatement program that reduces the potential for the spread of fire from one property to another and to make suppression of those fires more achievable. The number of lots previously, in previous years, have varied from 65 to 100 or more than 100. Several years ago, staff and council agreed to restructure the program to increase property owner awareness and reduce the incentive for property owners to rely on the city to maintain these lots. In the past 5 years, new design of this program has also reduced the number of lots abated by more than 70%.
As a component of the new plan, fire department administrative fees were implemented to diminish the cost impact on the city. The fire direct administrative fee is calculated by dividing the number of the program cost by the number of lots abated. And then attached is a 2004 itemized weed abatement direct program cost report as required by the government code section 39574. On April 5th, 2004, council adopted a resolution identifying noxious weeds and debris to be a C-fileable protest, adopt the resolution authorizing the city clerk to attach the weed abatement cost to the properties in the amounts listed in Exhibit A for the assessment on the county tax rolls. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is there any questions of staff?
No.
Okay, this is a public hearing.
I have a question.
Oh, excuse me.
At the attachment one, you're stating that it's going to take 24 hours of administrative secretary's time and seven of the chief fire chief's time. Is that pretty much after things have taken care of it? Why that's it looks extensive to me.
This is the total cost of the program. This is not per lot. So it does assume that, like, I may spend 2 hours a week looking at lots, which I do frequently, and then the noticing, the preparation, the all the rest of the stuff. These are pretty accurate numbers. These were what we are doing, and it does seem high, but that's what it costs. And in the past, our intent is to take this burden off the city and give it back to the people who find it easier for us to abate the property than to deal with it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the public that has any questions of this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to council.
I move that we conduct the required protest hearing and two, upon finding no justifiable protest, adopt the resolution authorizing the city clerk to attach weed abatement costs to properties in the amounts listed on Exhibit A for assessment on the county tax rolls.
Second.
It's number 04-08, amending the Grover Beach Municipal Code regarding requirements for fire sprinklers.
Thank you, Mayor Santos, members of the council, ladies and gentlemen. On June 7th, 2004, the city council introduced an ordinance amending the existing fire sprinkler ordinance. Staff presented a proposal that would reduce the square footage requirement from 5,000 square feet to 1,000 square feet. As presented to the City Council at the June 7th meeting, this plan puts a substantial cap on fire potential losses, increases life safety for occupants, and protects the city's tax base, local jobs, and significantly reduces the future need to expand the fire department. As you may recall, during the fire service enhancement proposals, we brought forward a growth management plan that identified programs such as the code enforcement program and others, one of these being the fire sprinkler reduction in square footage. The intention here is to put an automatic firefighter in every building in excess of 1,000 square feet in the future. We have a very large quantity of older buildings, and as they are removed or replaced, these buildings would be protected by automatic systems. The money we can save on enhancing the fire department in the future, spending it on personnel and equipment cost, hopefully would be limited to a water vacuum. The intent here is to allow the council to eliminate the opportunity to outgrow the fire department and use those monies on our streets and other things that the community needs. So it's a protection measure for taxpayer dollars. Be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Is there any questions of staff? Councilmember Ekpo?
This is another one I was really surprised about. You're dramatically increasing the cost of housing.
And that's what the insurance companies really care about. That's where the loss is. And that's where our tax base is and our jobs are and so on. Residential systems are really designed to protect people. They're built differently. They operate at lower operating temperatures. And the cost is about 1.5% of the cost of the home. So for a 2,500 square foot house, you're looking at about $3,700 to put a system in. So they're not all that expensive anymore. There's new technology. They're cheaper and they're very efficient. So it was a measuring stick that I was looking at as we did this growth management plan, and how can we better use taxpayer dollars instead of continuing to invest in the fire department as the community grows, which it will. The other thing we're looking at is the growing use of mixed occupancies. and the mixed oxygen to be used is created as hazards that maybe don't exist today by putting residents on top of commercial structures and so on. The other thing we're looking at is the second units, building, allowing second units to build to the rear of the property. And in many cases, these applications are coming in with 10-foot driveways. And it's not a matter of just trimming the hedge to get a fire truck back there. It's a matter that you have a building that sits on that 10-foot line next to the property line. So it's basically impossible to get the unit back. By doing this, we could allow that second unit to be built and have very little concern because it would be automatically protected and it would require us to pull lines to the rear. So there's much more to it than I don't want to simplify it. There's a whole lot of thought process that went into this.
But it's still a $3,000 cost. And
that's correct.
And I believe that I watched the TV coverage of your meeting on the 7th. I was not here. You're right.
Okay.
But I think Ron...
1,000 square feet or more. So in all existing buildings or structures with a total floor area exceeding 1,000 square feet, which undergoes additions in excess of 50% of the current square footage or current valuation, at the time of the building permit, or 25% of the existing floor area. So if you wanted to increase your building by 25%, you'd be required to put them in, or by 50% of your valuation.
And I would challenge that that's a really significant cost. If you remember the retrofitting of this building, it was $65,000, wasn't it? I'm trying to remember.
Money, I don't know.
It was huge. We made it, we kind of agonized over doing that for this building that's under 5,000 square feet. $65,000 to retrofit this.
And if I may, just the systems they're using on the residential are very often just copper pipe or plastic pipe. It's a particular pipe. So we're not using the heavy steel pipe that you find in the commercial structures, which indeed would cause this kind of cost.
Well, if you're requiring this for all buildings, you're requiring it for all buildings.
But the cost in the residential would be different than the commercial.
Right.
Yes.
But you're still requiring it for commercial.
That's correct.
Retrofitting. So it's a huge cost to retrofit your buildings. I understand that as you go up, if you're putting second and third stories, that you have different size piping or different heads or something also because of you have to apparently increase the pressure to get the water,
the
volume of water to handle
the volume, the pressure is one thing, and there's two systems, and one per 100 cubic foot of water application, where in a residential they might be 9 to 11 gallons. So there's a significant difference in pipe sizing and pressures and so on.
But doesn't the cost still go up as you go up the cost?
On the occupancy classification, if it's residential, the price would be much lower than the ground floors were. The other things that we run into are the I had another response for you, but I'll leave it at that because it slipped my mind. And this is an
part
option.
I'm thinking of. One of the problems with fire damage is water damage. I think often it is more serious than the fire damage in homes. Here you're guaranteeing you're going to have a lot of fire damage for any small fire. I mean, a water damage.
The fire is going to be put out basically immediately once it reaches a certain height before it breaches flashover, what a fire would do. Then we're going to be dumping maybe two hose lines at 125 gallons a minute where the fire sprinkler, usually no more than one or two heads goes off, and you're looking at 11 gallons a minute. So it's significant savings in water.
I'm a layman. If this room catches on fire, is this the only sprinkler room that goes off, or does the water go on for the whole house?
Only the head above the fire will go off, and they put the fire out.
Okay.
And they have alarms on them. The only maintenance required is once a year, you go out and you open up the inspector's test, and you flush your system and check, make sure the bell goes off, then you turn it off, and that's it.
Okay. Well, then I'm back to the only argument that if we're going to talk about affordable houses, to do it, but that doesn't mean our fire department goes away because we have more houses that are sprinklered. It means that they're not there fighting the fire quite as long.
And what you're saying is true. This is just nothing more than an opportunity to have to invest later on in a fire department in people where we can do it up front. And the people sitting in here will not have to pay for future firefighters where we can do it during the development phase and let the person electing to build the house or move here pay that cost now up front.
I guess I'm just struggling with this from the issue of retrofitting the cost to do that, and I think there should be some